Good snap, good hold. Kick, perfect. And the Broncos have come to Buffalo, and they're going to leave with a win, 24-22.
How about those Broncos? Man, oh man alive. Denver Broncos winning. They knocked off the Chiefs. Now they go to Buffalo and beat the Bills last night. Monday Night Football, very odd game. Welcome to Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive. In Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. The Bills, with four turnovers last night, still had a chance to win after taking a lead on a six-yard touchdown run by Josh Allen with 1:55 remaining. The Broncos and the Bills were tied at 15 all. The Broncos scored a touchdown and then botched the snap hold for the extra point. So then the Bills go down and score and get the extra point. But the Broncos respond with Russell Wilson. They drive down the field. They had a second down play. The Bills brought an all-out blitz, sacked Russell Wilson, took the Broncos out of field goal range. Very next play, bring an all-out blitz again, and Russell Wilson just lobs one down the middle of the field, pass interference on the Bills on a third and long. So now the Broncos are in field goal range. So they run down as much clock as they can. The Bills burn their timeouts. The Broncos have a third down situation with 24 seconds to go. They could go ahead and kick the field goal, but then give the Bills a little bit of time to go get a field goal to win. Or they could try to go ahead and shove out their field goal unit, and they had time to plan that after a timeout. So on third down, they go ahead and take a knee, set it up middle of the field between the hash marks for their kicker, Will Lutz. And the field goal unit comes out, and they seemed to go faster than they needed to. It seemed like it was rushed, even though I didn't think it had to be. And the field goal is wide to the right. And Bill fans are rejoicing, like, whew, we dodged a huge bullet there. Problem is, the Bills had 12 men on the field. And so the Broncos got to re-kick it, make a 36-yard field goal, and the Broncos win the ball game. It was NFL record sixth game this weekend decided on the final play. The Bills dropped to 5-5 with the loss. They're currently out of the AFC playoffs. The Broncos now are starting to squeak their way towards that conversation. They are now 4-5, and they have the same record as the resurgent LA Chargers, who are 4-5 after losing to the Lions on a last-second field goal on Sunday. The Chiefs in the driver's seat for the number one seed. They didn't even play this week. Could have gone any better for the Chiefs this week. Mahomes got to see Texas Tech win against Kansas. Travis Kelce goes to Argentina, gets a big smooch backstage, and Taylor Swift changes a lyric of her song for Chiefs fans and for Travis Kelce in particular. And then the Ravens lose at home to the Browns. The Jaguars get blown out at home by the Niners. The Dolphins had a bye, but the Chiefs have the head-to-head against them. The Bills lose last night to the Broncos at home. The Bengals lost at home to the Texans. And the Chargers lost to the Lions. The Ravens, the Bengals, the Bills, the Jags, and the Chargers all lost at home. At home. So if the season ended today, Chiefs are the number one seed. And even if they would lose their next game, and the Ravens had the same record, the Chiefs would still have the number one seed. The Ravens are the two seed. The Jags are the three. The Dolphins are the four. The Chiefs have head-to-head against the Jags and the Dolphins. The Steelers are the five. The Browns are the six. The Texans are the seven. And the Chiefs have the head-to-head, or they have the tiebreaker in regards to the conference losses versus the Ravens. The Chiefs own all tiebreakers right now. So for all those people thinking that the Chiefs, this is their year where, we're just not good enough. We don't have a good wide receiving core. We're not as good as I thought we might be. This isn't a Super Bowl caliber team. Please tell me who is. Please, please, please enlighten me and tell me who is. And here's the interesting part. I know a lot of Chiefs fans are worried about the Bengals, which I'm one of those as always. I'm sure some Chiefs fans still worry about the Chargers a little bit. I know that there's some Chiefs fans that still worry about Josh Allen and the Bills. Think about this for a second. The Chiefs right now are the number one overall seed in the AFC. Their offense hasn't even really gotten consistently clicking yet, and I don't think there's any doubt that they'll eventually figure some things out. And they've had plenty of time after getting back from Germany to try to figure some things out before their Monday Night Football game against the Eagles next Monday, which you can hear on Z96.3 The Lake. But if you're a Chiefs fan, if the Bengals, the Bills, the Chargers, none of those are in the playoffs, and that's what it would be today. And granted, it could change. The Bills could get hot. The Bengals could get hot. The Chargers could. Okay, let's not go that far. But the point is that right now, if you're a Chiefs fan, who are you scared of in the AFC? Like, you're probably, we're scared of the Bengals, obviously. I was worried about them last year. You probably still got some concern with the Bills. They're still a talented team. Chargers maybe have a little bit of concerns because they are talented. There's no doubt. But are you really, really freaking out if you have to play the Ravens? I'm not. Are you freaking out if you have to play the Jaguars? I'm not. Are you freaking out if you have to play the Steelers? No. I mean, the Steelers offense struggles. I mean, their defense pretty good, but the Chiefs defense is outstanding. You're going to freak out about the Browns? Listen, I'll take Patrick Mahomes against Deshaun Watson every day of the week. Now, granted, the Browns have a really good defense. I think they are a somewhat scary team. They can run the ball, play defense. That might be a tough matchup for the Chiefs. And the Texans are, do we think C.J. Stroud's going to play like he's been playing in the playoffs? Probably not, although who knows? Maybe they're the biggest challenger of the Chiefs, and we don't even know it yet. The only team that concerns me majorly out of all of these teams is the Dolphins. And you may sit here and say, well, what do you mean, the Dolphins? They haven't beat a team with a winning record. Listen, the Dolphins get a cane back. That changes their offense. He is a speedster in the backfield. He didn't play against the Chiefs. Waddle was banged up against the Chiefs. And they still had a chance to tie the game in the final minutes, despite how, and the Chiefs, oh yeah, and the Chiefs got a defensive lateral for a touchdown. You don't get that every day. The Chiefs offense only scored 14 points against the Miami Dolphin defense. So the Dolphins have the weapons, and they have the firepower. They're still a concern for me. Now, if you give me Dolphins at Arrowhead on a very cold day, I'm taking Chiefs every day of the week. But if it's a nice weather day, that would concern me a little bit because they do have the firepower. But honestly, my bigger concern would be the Bengals, and that's why I love when the Bengals lose. The Texans would be playing house money. The Texans remind me of the Jaguars from last year. A team that's on the rise, they've got a good young quarterback, but does anybody think they're really going to go all the way to the Super Bowl and beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead? Because that's probably what would have to happen. So I look at this playoff field right now, and I know it can change. We still have 8 games to play, in some cases 7. But the Chiefs couldn't be in a better spot had you told me before the year this is the spot the Chiefs would be in and the offense hasn't even figured things out yet. I'd be like, dang, sign me up. Bengals and Bills. The Bengals are 5-4. The Bills are 5-5. They're not even in the playoffs. The Chargers are 4-5. The Chiefs have head-to-heads against 2 of the teams in the AFC, and they have the head-to-head, and not head-to-head, but the tiebreaker with the Ravens with conference losses. You got the Ravens with. I'm going to worry about Lamar Jackson in the playoffs. That guy never does come through in the playoffs. Now, you know, there's a first time for everything. The Steelers and the Browns instead of the Bengals and the Bills, sign me up. This is all aligning to where, and we've said this before, you can win a championship and not be as good as you once were. We talked about the Beloit volleyball team that I said next year, I've gone on record. I think Beloit volleyball team next year has got a tremendous chance to win a state title next year. And they probably won't be as good as this year's team, but the field will be different. Heritage Christian won't have 2 Division I signees unless they recruit to their private school and get somebody. So that changes the field next year. And we've seen KU teams, obviously, a few years ago win a national championship. That team that won the national title for Bill Self was probably, maybe if you're lucky, the 5th best team he's had. And they won it all. And so it's not always your best team that wins it all. And if you're going to win Super Bowls and get 7 Super Bowls and match Brady, if you're Mahomes, you got to steal a few. Some people think that she stole one last year. All right? But you're going to have to win a few when you're not really great, but maybe the field has come back a little bit. Maybe the field is all full of parity and there's not a great big time challenger. You just got a lot of up and comers. And right now, I'm sitting here looking at this Chiefs team going, their defense is legit. Their offense has lots of things to figure out, but still time to figure it out. Special teams, for the most part, has been pretty solid. They've got great wins over the Jaguars and the Dolphins. And they still get to play. And here's the funny thing. The Chiefs might have a chance to knock out the Bills and Bengals head-to-head. The Chiefs play the Bills at home, And they play the Bengals at home on, what is it, New Year's Day or New Year's Eve day or night? I mean, it could be conceivable that the Bills come to Kansas City and the Chiefs could put the final nail in the coffin for them. And then the Bengals are playing for their season on December 31st. And if they lose, if the Chiefs beat them, they knock the Bengals out of the playoffs. I mean, this is, and they're both at home. Bills and Bengals are at home. Could you write up a better setup for the Kansas City Chiefs right now? I mean,
no.
Granted, they could lose Monday to the Eagles. And if they do, it's not the end of the world. They'd still be the number one seed in the AFC. Yes, the Ravens, if they played, if they win Thursday, they'd be 8-3. They had a half game lead, but the Chiefs have the tiebreaker because two of the three Chiefs losses would be against NFC teams. The Ravens have lost to the Colts, the Steelers, and the Browns. They're all AFC teams. So if you're going to lose games, you want to lose to the NFC teams. And the Chiefs, one of their two losses is to an NFC team in the Lions. And if they lose the Eagles, that's not going to hurt them that much if they're in a tie with a team they don't play head-to-head, and they don't play the Ravens on the schedule this year. The Steelers aren't going to challenge for this number one seed. The Browns, I don't think, are. The Texans aren't. The Dolphins, you got the head-to-head, so you're good there. You should be. The Jaguars, you got the head-to-head. You're good. You should be good there. Really, the only team the Chiefs got to worry about getting the number one seed right now is the Baltimore Ravens. And so now I'm torn. Because Thursday night is the Ravens and the Bengals. Thursday night, Bengals-Ravens. I believe it's in Baltimore. Who do I cheer for? I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I want Joe Burrow and the Bengals to be done. So I'm cheering for the Ravens to win because even though that makes the number one seed still tight for the Chiefs, I would just go ahead and be happy with the Bengals just going ahead and falling apart. So I am all for the Ravens to win, even though it makes no sense in regards to the number one seed race. But I think the Ravens will still stumble later on. As I said, the Chiefs have the tiebreaker if it comes to conference losses. And I'm not as scared about the Ravens. And I'm not scared that the Chiefs can't go to Baltimore and win. Although I don't think they're going to have to anyway. But here's why I still think the Bengals are the team to worry about the most. And I know they just lost to the Texans. They're 5-4. They keep getting hurt. Joe Burrow was hurt for the first three or four games, and they were horrible offensively. Have you noticed how they're way better now offensively since he's gotten healthy? Way better. Now what? And they were rolling going into this last game. They'd won four in a row. They were 5-3. They lost to the Texans. You may say, "Oh, what a horrible loss! They lost to the Texans at home." Ja'Marr Chase was banged up. T. Higgins didn't play. I mean, their top two wide receivers were one didn't play and one was not nearly close to 100%, even though he had a good game. And they still almost won. So if the Bengals get healthy, and one of their best defenders, Hendrickson, left the game against the Texans, best pass rusher. If the Bengals get healthy, I still think they're the team I would worry about the most if I'm a Chiefs fan. So Thursday night, you can cheer for whoever you want, but if the Bengals lose, they're 5-5. And then you would have the Bills and Bengals both 5-5 after Thursday night. Who would have thunk that? You're going to have to get to 10 wins to make the playoffs in the AFC. You might need 11, but probably 10. So that means then that the Bills and the Bengals would have to go 5-2 the rest of the way, and that would require the Bills and Bengals probably to beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead. Sign me up.
History proves that the Bengals are the biggest problem for
yes,
the Chiefs.
No
and
question.
Joe Burrow at quarterback, right?
Yes.
And so,
no matter where the game is.
Yeah, so I am not worried about the Ravens beating the Bengals. Let's go ahead and make it happen.
You're cool with that?
Yes.
You're cheering for the Ravens to win.
I want the Ravens to win.
I'm going with that. I'm with you.
I'm the guy that will never say I'm cheering for anybody but my team, right? But I want the Ravens to win.
Because I'm waiting for the Lamar Jackson injury. So let's go ahead and beat the Bengals while you're healthy. Then you get a nice big fat lead. Then you lose a game or two because Lamar's hurt. And then you go in the playoffs as a 3 seed and the Bengals are out. Because if the Bengals get in as a 7, anybody think they can't go to Baltimore and win and then be at Kansas City in the divisional round? I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Or if the Chiefs somehow are the 2 seed, the Bengals are the 7, guess who the Chiefs play in the divisional first round? Wild card round.
The Bengals.
The Bengals.
Yeah.
So I don't want the Bengals in at all. Now, you could argue, well, they need the Bengals to win some so they get in the middle of the pack.
No, no, no. Let's just go ahead and eliminate
them. Just get them out. Get the Bengals out. Keep the Bills out. Yeah, yeah. You know, the way. And
I'm not as worried about the Bills.
Well, I'm not saying I'm afraid of the Bills. I'm just saying the scenario that you were talking about, I like a lot, right? Like, if we can have the Steelers in here
and the Browns.
Browns in here. Just the keep Texans. Those teams out of there. And don't even have to worry about them, right? Like, because I know that they've got quarterbacks that can do things
in the postseason.
And so. Yeah, I'm not concerned about the Bills. Bills almost beat the Chiefs the 1 year, but 13 seconds were still on the clock. Mm-hmm. So I just don't even have to worry about them. Just keep them all out.
Well, let me ask you this, and this is a sports ticket brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive and Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. We're going to talk some KU and K-State basketball coming up, as KU's got a big game coming up tonight against Kentucky, and then we'll tell you about making $26,000 a day after being fired. That's coming up as well. So go ahead and help me out, and you can rank these, okay? Because when you get to the playoffs, unless you have a just dominant, unbelievable defense, it really comes down to quarterback play. I mean, it really comes down to who's got the best quarterbacks. We've seen this now for years. Mahomes and Burrow, AFC title game multiple times. We've seen Allen and Mahomes. Okay, so if you had to rank the quarterbacks, and I'm going to give you the six teams that are in the playoff field right now in the AFC, plus I'm going to add in the Bills, the Bengals, and the Chargers, okay? Because they all still could get in,
yeah.
But right now they're out. The Chargers are 4-5, the Bills are 5-5, and the Bengals are 5-4. So you've got nine quarterbacks to rank. You ready? So you've got Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, C.J. Stroud, Deshaun Watson, Kenny Pickett, Tua, Trevor Lawrence, Lamar Jackson. Who's the number one quarterback out of that group?
I'm going to say Burrow right now.
Okay, I'm with you. Okay, so Burrow's number one. Who's number two on that list?
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen, although he is a turnover machine, yeah. But he has the capability of run pass. I would agree with you. Who's three on that list?
Oh, man. Trying to remember all the guys you said there, too.
Tua, Lamar, Trevor Lawrence, Pickett, Watson, C.J. Stroud, Herbert.
I would say with everything they can do, I'm going to say Trevor.
I'd say Trevor third. Okay. Fourth.
Lamar.
Lamar. Fifth. Herbert.
Yeah.
Or Tua.
I wanted to do Tua, but right now I'm going to say Herbert.
Herbert. Okay.
And then Tua.
And then you got Watson, Stroud. Well, I'd put Stroud after that.
Stroud,
and then
yeah.
Watson and Pickett. Probably Watson.
Watson, then Pickett, yeah.
And then Pickett. Okay. So.
And that's a lot based on what they've already accomplished and what they still need to do.
Right. I really don't care what they've accomplished.
Yes.
I'm focusing on who gives the Chiefs problems.
Yeah.
So Trevor Lawrence is number three on your list. So your top two are quarterbacks that are on teams that aren't in the playoffs today, and that's the Bills Bengals. That adds to what we're talking
exactly.
about. Exactly. You love to have – that's why I wanted to illustrate the point. You want to have these top quarterbacks that are out. Do you fear Trevor Lawrence? No.
No.
Do you fear Joe Burrow? I think a little bit. Do you fear Josh Allen? At times. Sometimes the Bills fear Josh Allen because
yeah.
of his turnovers. Do you fear Lamar Jackson? Yeah, at times. Do you fear Justin Herbert? I don't anymore. Do you fear Tua? A little bit because of his weapons.
I don't fear him if you can get pressure on him. Though.
Right. You fear. And see, the other thing about the Dolphins that would worry me as a rematch is they'll make adjustments.
Yeah.
C.J. Stroud, do you fear him? I don't think we are there yet, but maybe we should.
He's the example of a guy that I was talking about that I've not seen it yet, so I don't know if I should fear him.
And Watson Pickett, I don't worry about. So, and Watson, he has a pretty good team around him with the Cleveland Browns. Their defense is really good. Like I said, they got a running game. That might be an interesting matchup for the Chiefs because of the way the Browns play. They gave them a really good game a few years ago in the playoffs and nearly knocked off the Chiefs, although it did take Mahomes. Did he not have a concussion situation, if you remember that? So we just mentioned that three of the top five quarterbacks of that group of nine wouldn't be in the playoffs today. Thus is why it was a great weekend for the Chiefs because the Bengals, the Bills, and the Chargers all lost. The Jags lost, so the Chiefs got even more room between them and the Jags. And the Ravens lost. So now, even if the Chiefs lose to the Eagles, and the Ravens beat the Bengals, yes, the Ravens would have a half game lead, but the Chiefs can get that right back when the Ravens have their bye and the Chiefs own the tiebreaker against the Ravens. So the Chiefs actually have some room for error, believe it or not, after 9 weeks, and that's not very often you can say that, especially with a number one seed situation. And yet the Chiefs just aren't that good, is what some Chiefs fans tell me.
Yeah.
Chiefs fans, you got to start watching more than just the Chiefs. You really need to pay attention to what's actually happening in this league, in your conference. Don't even worry about the national. Don't worry about the NFC. Just worry about your own conference. By the way, all the teams with a winning record in the NFC don't have a strength of schedule over 500. So are you freaking? Oh, the Eagles. The Eagles have struggled in some games. They're not lights out. The Niners, when they play well, have been lights out. When they play well, they also lost three in a row. And injuries are part of that. The Ravens have looked dominant against a couple of teams, including the Lions, and they had another blowout against somebody. I forgot who it was. But then they turned around and lost to the Browns at home. So, and blew a double-digit lead at home. And that's a running football team for the most part. So every team, I mean, if you look at the Ravens, I think the question mark is their defense is really good. The question mark still to me is Lamar Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
And they're if they're so great with running the ball and their defense is number one in football, how'd they lose to the Browns? They gave up 33. Jaguars, they have they're inconsistent on offense. Their defense is solid. The Dolphins haven't beaten a winning team yet this year. They haven't beat a winning team in a year and a half. So you can't say that they're locked and loaded and unbelievable. The Steelers have all kinds of issues on offense, although they're improving a little bit. The Browns, I think quarterback is still a question mark. And the Texans, I think a lot of people don't know a lot about the Texans yet because they're the up-and-comer. And we know the Bills have all kinds of problems with turnovers. Four last night. Josh Allen just dropped the ball when he's trying to hand it off to James Cook. I mean, it's really bad for the Bills. The Bengals have injury issues, inconsistency in offense, and Orlando Brown has not played well, shockingly, at tackle for the Bengals. The Chargers, they just know how to charger. They can play a lot of great games and exciting games, but just can't win at the end. So they can't finish. So I've given you every single team in the AFC that is either close to making the playoffs or is in the playoffs. But everybody wants to focus on what's wrong with the Chiefs. It's like everybody else has major problems here, more so than the Chiefs do. The Chiefs also are relatively healthy. Nick Bolton they don't have, but for the most part, other than that, they're pretty healthy. So I think Chiefs fans need to, I don't know, maybe relax a little bit.
Surely not.
No.
I've never said that about the Chiefs.
No,
fans before,
never.
That they need to relax.
Never. You're helping paint a very poor picture of us objective Chiefs fans that actually get it. If you do get it, I'm not talking about you. If you don't get it, you know who I'm talking about. So wide receiver is a question for the Chiefs. Yesterday, Andy Reid was talking about Kadarius Toney. The Chiefs fans are like, why isn't Toney on the field more? Well, week one, he couldn't catch a cold. Toney didn't play very much, 7 snaps against the Dolphins in Germany. I wondered if he was in the doghouse or if he was hurt again. I saw him with his helmet on, and right after I texted a couple of my buddies, I'm like, is Toney even playing? He went in and caught a catch, had a catch for like 17 yards, nice run after the catch, and that was it. That's the only catch he had in the game. Andy Reid has a plan for Kadarius Toney, or so it seems.
I just want to remind everybody that he did have the knee surgery, so we're taking it. We're taking it easy with him up to this point. And so just making sure he can make it through the year and in good health. He played 7 plays last week. And so we can play him more than that and still be okay. I mean, and then, you know, we just keep an eye on his leg and make sure that we're repping that out the right way and let him keep progressing as we go here throughout the year. I mean, that's the important part.
So they know he's made out of glass and they're trying to have him ready to go for when they really need him. That makes sense. I have no problem with it. I have no problem with it at all. The Chiefs have a plan. I know some Chiefs fans think they don't. These guys didn't get to where they are, and they have. And by the way, they have won 2 Super Bowls and been the 3. We sometimes Chiefs fans act like this is Andy Reid's first year or Brett Veach's first year. This isn't their first rodeo. And by the way, when people want to criticize a draft pick that hasn't performed, like people want to point out Sky Moore, you're not going to hit a home run with every draft pick. You're going to miss. And maybe Sky Moore is a late bloomer and it won't be a miss. Right now it looks like a miss, but it's only his second year, okay? So maybe he's not a miss. But you're not going to hit 1,000 as a general manager when you draft people. You're going to have some bad picks from time to time, okay? So maybe you missed there, but you hit on Rashee Rice. Well, that's okay. Well, then we got one bona fide good receiver, which we'll see if Rice continues to be more of the offense. He's getting more snaps, and that's a good thing, I think, for the Chiefs. But they need to actually get in the ball more often, in my opinion, which I'm sure there's a plan for that. Matthew Derrick, Chiefs Digest, will join us tomorrow to talk Chiefs football and get ready for their showdown rematch of Super Bowl 57 between the Eagles and the Chiefs in Arrowhead coming up on Monday night. When we return, we turn our attention to college basketball. K-State went in action last night, and KU with a big matchup this evening against Kentucky.
We have an exciting announcement to make. I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Greg Honyel has joined our team. Greg's been fixing cars in Beloit for about 36 years now, so a lot of you already know him. Greg, tell us about yourself.
I've been fixing cars in Beloit for 36 years. I've been ASE Master Certified for 32 and Chrysler Master Certified for 15. I'd be happy to work on your vehicle, and you can find me at Kiever Brothers.
And you can find Kiever Brothers just south of the courthouse in Beloit or online at KieferBrothers.com.
Carter's going to take a three. He got another one. Cam Carter with 15 in the first half.
Cam Carter, Brian Smoller called it last year after the season's over. I asked him about what about the upcoming season, and he thought Cam Carter could take a huge step forward, and it does appear that that is the case. Cam Carter last night, nice game for Kansas State. He had, he had 25 points, a career high, 4 of 8 from 3. Tyler Perry hit 6 three-pointers at 22 points. R.J. Jones hit 4 three-pointers, his first double-figure game of career with 14 points. K-State beats South Dakota State 91-68. They're 2-1. Outscored the Jackrabbits by 14 in the second half, shot 56% from 3, made 14 threes on the night, the fifth most made in a single game in K-State history. Here's Jerome Tang on Cam Carter's big night.
Very pleased. I know Cam had a career high, but I was more pleased with what he did on the defensive end because that young fella, Mayo, was averaging 28 coming in, and he's a heck of a player. And some of it was, you know, he missed some shots he normally made, but a lot of it was Cam really being locked in on that.
So K-State gets the win. They now hit the road to the Bahamas, where they'll face Providence coming up on Friday night. Number one, Kansas, is in action tonight against number 14, Kentucky. Kansas, number one in the country. Number two, Purdue, won last night. And Arizona has moved all the way up to number three after they beat Duke the other night there in Cameron Indoor. So KU, number one team, first challenge of the season. They're 2-0. They take on Kentucky. One poll has them at 14. One has them at 17. You pick whichever. If you're going to promote your school and who you're playing, you always, of course, as we talked about before, you always go with the highest ranked number. So KU and Kentucky. Kentucky, of course, has all kinds of talent, as they normally do. Here's Bill Self on what stands out about the Wildcats, who KU plays tonight in Chicago in the Champions Classic.
I think they can score, individually, really score. Whether it be Dillingham, obviously, or Wagner, or Edwards, or Mitchell, or Shepherd, or whoever. I mean, those guys can score the ball individually, and they're good forcing help and getting downhill individually. So I'd say athleticism, fast, hard to keep in front, good in transition.
So, Kansas and Kentucky tonight, supposed to tip off around 8:30, probably won't. Pre-game will be 8 o'clock tonight on Z96.3 The Lake. Hunter Dickinson, by the way, was Big 12 newcomer of the week, averaged 19.5 points, 8 rebounds, and 2 wins for the Jayhawks, and wins over North Carolina Central and Manhattan. Number 9 Duke will face number 18 Michigan State at 6 o'clock. That's the first game of the doubleheader. And then it's KU versus Kentucky coming up after that. Kansas, this is going to be interesting to see. You know, this is one thing that I really, really like about college basketball versus college football. I know college football, more games are important. You know, early in the year, you lose, you can be knocked out. So each game, there's a little bit more, I guess, pressure, you could say, to win if you want to be a college national championship football team. Now, that's going to be The importance of every game is going to be lessened somewhat by expanding the playoff to 12. It's still going to be important for a lot of – it'll bring in more important games for other teams, but it's going to be not as important for some teams. Like Alabama don't have to worry about losing one, although I'd argue they didn't have to worry about losing one in the current system. They don't have to worry about losing two, probably. Georgia don't have to worry about losing two. Texas could lose two, and they're probably still in the top 12. So maybe it lessens the schedule a little bit. Does it encourage college football teams to have maybe some tougher games on the schedule because you have more room for air to make it into the college football playoff? Possibly. Of course, the flip side could be you play a weaker schedule and then you can still get in, whereas you play a weak schedule, you can't get in top four unless you're a name brand. In college basketball, you don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, we started 2-5. Even in a small league, because the tournament champion is the automatic qualifier. So you can be 10-20 going into the tournament, and you win your conference tournament, you go into the NCAA tournament if you're in the MEAC or whatever conference that might be. So if you're Kansas, you know, Kansas can have more losses than other teams and still get a number one seed. Why? Because they play in the best conference in America, or at least has been for a while, the Big 12. They usually win the conference. So if you win the conference and you play a lot of unbelievable teams, KU doesn't. They usually have a tough non-con. I saw this the other day that Kansas could end up playing 5 of the top 17 teams in America right now before December 1st.
Yeah.
So even if Kansas goes 2-3 in those games, they might have 9 losses and other teams have 6. You don't think that helps them get the number one seed? Because that's what happens every year. So, thus, Bill Self's not worried about, oh my gosh, we lose to Kentucky, we're not going to be a one seed. That's what makes college basketball great, is that we can get some of these marquee matchups. We have Duke and Michigan State. We had Duke and Arizona. We've got Kansas and Kentucky tonight. We're going to have Kansas possibly in Marquette, and they're ranked 4th. And you have Kansas, possibly Gonzaga. I mean, there's got tournament situations with Maui. I mean, there's – and you have these tournaments, too. So you could end up having a bad tournament. You could end up going 1-2 in a stacked field, and, yeah, your ranking goes down, but it helps your strength of schedule when you go to the seed lines when they come to Selection Sunday. So that's one thing that I really like about college basketball, is I know not every game is important, but you have the chance to have more marquee games, which helps market your sport to people that are out there. And it's also important to get people's attention on college basketball early in the year when you're fighting the National Football League. You're competing with college football. You've even got the NBA, if that's something you consider, and the NHL, which those two aren't quite as popular. But you look at Kansas, and they got UConn on December 1st, by the way. Yeah. So, and I'm going to pull it up, Marquette, Kansas could face Marquette in the second round of the Maui Invitational. They then could face number 11 Gonzaga or number 2 Purdue or number 17 Tennessee in the championship or a third place game, because they'll probably beat Chaminade in the first round. I'm going to go on a limb here.
That's a good prediction.
And then UConn's ranked, obviously. So, and I mean, that's a pretty good non-con schedule. So Bill Self doesn't duck anybody, and it helps him come Selection Sunday. So Kansas fans tonight, if Kansas goes out and loses, which I'm not saying they will, but if they do, same thing that I say to Chiefs fans, shellax, especially in this situation. You know, losing 1 out of 17 games is a little bit bigger deal than losing 1 out of 40. And that's what you have in college basketball. You have like 35, well, how many games do you end up? About 40 or so. It's no big deal. If you get beat by 30. Listen, what happened a few years ago? Kansas lost, they got destroyed at Allen Fieldhouse by Kentucky. They lost by 30 or 25. You remember what happened? Kansas won the national championship, and Kentucky lost to St. Peter's in the first round.
Yeah.
So which would you rather have, KU fans? Getting smoked by Kentucky at home in a national title, or beating Kentucky but losing to St. Peter's in the first round of the tournament? I know which one I vote for. So if you tell me Kansas loses tonight but they make it to the Final Four, I'll take that. If you tell me, well, we beat Kentucky but we lose second round, I don't want to beat Kentucky.
No.
Okay. Now, obviously, if you're a KU fan, you want to beat everybody. You want to win every game, and you definitely don't want to lose to John Calipari of all people. So it's going to be a fun game tonight, and these are the type of matchups that you want to see. Duke and Michigan State, Kansas and Kentucky. You want to see these matchups early in the year before you get into the conference season where it's a slugfest and everybody knows each other so well. And so it's fun to see Gonzaga and Kansas or Gonzaga and Duke. Arizona-Duke was a great game the other night that Arizona won, and they vaulted up the polls and the standings. These UConn and Kansas, December 1st, what an amazing matchup that's going to be at Allen Fieldhouse. Those tickets won't be cheap, will they? Kansas goes to Indiana. I know Indiana's not what they once were. Kansas plays Wichita State on a neutral floor in Kansas City. That's been a long time since Kansas played Wichita State in the regular season. And then they get into Big 12 play. They got Missouri in Lawrence. I mean, Kansas got UConn and Missouri coming up and Wichita State. And that ain't even counting the ranked teams they could be playing in the next 3 weeks. So this schedule is absolutely stacked and loaded. And this number one team is not ducking anybody. But if you're in college football, you would never have this many unbelievable games for people.
No, there was one year, was it Colorado maybe? Like, they just overscheduled. Yeah. Like, that Oregon and like, I think maybe Florida State. You know, when these teams were really good, right? And Colorado was decent still, right? I'm pretty sure it was Colorado. But it's like, you can't overschedule in college football. Like, you gotta play one of them teams.
Right.
If you're lucky, you can play one of those teams. In basketball, it's not the same. Like, if you're looking at this, like, I was baffled when I was putting everything together on Sunday that Wichita State can count friends as a win on their record.
Really?
Yeah. And well,
yeah, so an exhibition though.
Yeah, and it's an exhibition for friends, but for Wichita State it actually counts on their record. And I'm like, okay, here's the thing. A loss to Kentucky is going to look way better on your resume than a win over friends.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so think about those things when you're scheduling and things like that. And don't panic if you lose one of these games early in the season. I think it's pretty easy to know that. When you looked at, like you said, what happened a couple of years ago with Kentucky just coming to Allen Fieldhouse, blowing them out, and then KU wins the national championship in March and April, right? And so that's why I love college basketball. That's why I don't have the same feelings I have about college basketball that I do about college football, right? Like, about, hey, you know, you're playing for the prize. You're still playing for the prize as long as you get into that tournament and have that opportunity, and there's multiple opportunities to get into that tournament. There's not multiple opportunities to get into the college football playoff. If you lose, you're done for some teams. And so that's the joy of watching college basketball at this time of the year. You know, I don't watch it much as I probably should and could, but these kind of matchups at this time of the year are fun. And KU's never ducked any matchups like this, and they never will. And the reason they don't is because they don't have to.
Right.
Some college football teams do have to duck some opponents that you should probably maybe play, get you better early in the season, but you can't suffer the loss and you can't lose that game. So it's definitely an advantage that college basketball has over college football. You know, like you said, that'll change a little bit when we go to 12 teams in football, but for the playoff. But love these kind of matchups early in the season.
By the way, I need to apologize to Tennessee. I said 17th. This is amazing. I hadn't had a chance to really fully look at it. So the Maui Invitational, which is coming up for Kansas beginning next week, okay? First round, they play Chaminade. Their second round matchup will be against either UCLA or the number 4 team in the country, Marquette, in the semifinals at Maui. If Kansas gets by that one, the top half of the bracket has number 7 Tennessee and number 2 Purdue and number 11 Gonzaga. In the top half of the bracket at Maui, 3 of the top 11 teams. 5 of the top 11 teams in the country are at the Maui Invitational.
Yeah.
You win that tournament, you done something.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Kansas could end up losing to Marquette and play the number 4 team and still, on the backside of the bracket, end up playing, well, not backside. They'd be playing for third then. They could still play 2 top 10 teams despite being not in the championship. I mean, I've seen the Maui Invitational, and there's usually a few really good teams. Some years it's not quite as good as other years. That is a absolutely stacked tournament. Tennessee is ranked 7th. Purdue is number 2. The first round game is number 2 Purdue against number 11 Gonzaga. Yeah. Purdue's sitting here going, what'd we do to deserve this? We're number 2, and we got Gonzaga in the first matchup, and then we probably are going to play Tennessee number 7 in the next matchup.
Does that say Syracuse?
Syracuse
against,
yeah,
Tennessee. I couldn't see what
Syracuse
the
other
Tennessee.
Team was. Syracuse
but
is
what
ranked.
I mean, like, so, but when you look at that field, though, it's like this is a year outside of Chaminade, right? Like, where,
I mean, UCLA.
You know, the names that are in that tournament. Oh. There's been multiple tournaments and national championships mixed in there, and teams that have been really good recently. That's a heck of a field for sure.
The only three teams that are not ranked is UCLA, who's been really good the last few years, and then Syracuse. Of course, we know what they usually do. No Jim Boeheim anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course there's Chaminade. So that is an absolutely stacked field. Kansas will begin play on Monday. I don't know what we're going to do there. Kansas plays same time as the Chiefs do. The Chiefs game's way bigger deal on Monday than KU and Chaminade, and then we would have KU the rest of the week. You and I got to talk about that, figure out what we're going to do. It sometimes happens where KU and the Chiefs play at the same time, and obviously we can't play them both at the same time on Z96.3 The Lake, so we will work on that. But KU, a big matchup tonight against Kentucky, and I think we'll see definitely a little bit more about what Kansas is about tonight. Good barometer game, no question, for the Jayhawks. And pregame at 8 o'clock, and then they'll start the game either 8:30, might be 9 o'clock, but pregame will start 8 o'clock tonight on Z96.3 The Lake. And women's college hoops, KU on the road last night at Penn State. They lost 91-85. They're 1-1 on the season. Major League Baseball begun issuing their season awards. In the American League, Gunnar Henderson, the Orioles, was Rookie of the Year. Hit .255, 28 homers, 82 RBIs. Baltimore had the best record in the American League. He was a big part of that. Corbin Carroll, the D-backs, was Rookie of the Year in the National League. What a year he had. Hit .285, 25 homers, 76 RBIs, 56 stolen bases, as the D-backs made it all the way to the World Series. More awards to come in the days ahead for Major League Baseball. Dusty, how would you like to be fired?
Well, I don't want to be fired.
Not done yet. I did that on purpose. That was good. You played it the way I would have liked. Dusty, how would you like to be fired? You've established you wouldn't want to be, but what if I told you that I'll give you $26,301 a day every day for the next 8 years? I will give you that just to not work here anymore. What do you think?
I'd walk out of here pretty fast.
You take that?
Yeah.
You take that deal? Huh. Well, I talked about it a little bit yesterday on the show, but I'd like to get your input just a little bit here. The Jimbo Fisher era at Texas A&M is over. Jimbo Fisher at A&M, no national championships, no conference titles, no division titles, no 10-win seasons, no wins against ranked opponents on the road, zero ranked finishes in his last four full seasons, worse record than the previous coach, Kevin Sumlin, had, and he got $117.5 million guaranteed. Texas A&M's payments to Jimbo Fisher after firing him. Jimbo Fisher will be paid by Texas A&M $19.4 million over the course of the next 60 days. Their AD says that will come from the A&M's donor fund to give to a guy to just not coach anymore. Within 120 days, so over the course of the next 4 months, he will get another $7.27 million on top of the $19.4. And then every year through 2031, Jimbo Fisher will be paid $7.27 million per year in 2025, 2026, 2027, 2028, 2029, 2030, and 2031. That breaks down, according to mathematicians out there, to $26,301 average per day for the next basically 2,500 days. There are people that don't even come close to making that much in a year.
Yeah.
So how's A&M paying for this? Well, as I mentioned, $19.5 million will come from A&M's donor fund. Then the athletics budget takes a $7.3 million hit for each of the next 8 years. As somebody put, how is no one held accountable for these absurd contracts? That's a good question. Shouldn't somebody's head roll besides Jimbo Fisher's? Except he's a pretty happy guy. He gets all his money. It's a great question. They gave him a 10-year, $95 million guaranteed contract just 2 years ago because they were so scared he'd go to LSU. That's why they gave it to him. The buyouts are silly, but at the same time, that does, you know, I said it yesterday, you know, it does help Kansas financially if Lance Leipold's going to leave to have a buyout, get money to help hire the next coach. Same thing with Chris Klieman, Jerome Tang, Bill Self. They all have buyout clauses. But where it really blows up in your face is when that coach ends up not being
when
that
good. When it doesn't work, yeah.
It doesn't work, and then you're the one that has to pay out the buyout clause, not another school wanting you so badly. Now Florida State, or not Florida State, but that's where Jimbo used to be. Texas A&M, don't they wish that LSU really – it's so funny, it's ironic to me that – A&M was so worried about LSU getting Jimbo Fisher. That's why they gave him all that money 2 years ago and gave him this guaranteed deal with a huge buyout. And now, isn't it ironic that just probably in the last couple of weeks, they've probably been sitting there going, God, I wish LSU would give us a phone call. Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Dusty, that buyout, the previous biggest buyout in college sports history was $21.5 million, was the previous record held by Gus Malzahn at Auburn. This is $76 million buyout to just go away. So you've already, we joked for a while that KU is playing three football coaches at one point. I think it was Weiss, Mangino, and Gill or something, or Beatty. They're paying three guys. Well, the current coach and whoever the two were. And they finally got past that. That's chopped liver compared to this. Because you're going to be paying $7.3 million out of your athletic budget, not just for the next couple years. We're talking for the next 8 years, and you got to still hire a coach and throw a lot of money at that guy. And if I'm that guy, I'm like, dude, I'm better than Jimbo Fisher. So I think you should at least give me $5 or $6 million a year. So now you're going to be spending, what, $13, $14, $15 million a year for a football coach? And half of that, at least, is going to a guy that ain't even employed. I mean, Nick Saban, I believe, makes $12 million. A&M's going to spend over $12 million out of their athletic budget, probably, to have a football coach next year. And more of it's going to be going towards the guy they fired than the guy they hired, possibly. It's crazy. But there's just not enough money, remember? There's just not enough money. Not enough money in college sports. Jimbo Fisher had a worse record than Kevin Sumlin.
That's what stands out the most when you're talking about all that is like, yeah, they hated him by the time he was gone. Like the Texas A&M fans for sure. And like everybody just wanted this guy out. And it's like in the end, the guy that obviously had a lot of success at Florida State. I mean, won a national championship there. 14-0 and 13-1 2 years in a row, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, what, like, you think you're getting a really good coach, but he did kind of struggle his last year at Florida State, and then you kind of look at what he's done here at Texas A&M, which is basically not anything, right?
Right.
And so, not for what you're paying him to do.
They're 6-4 this year, by the way.
And so, man, it's crazy just to think about the money that gets sent out to all these, and it's just like magnified in that conference, right, in the SEC, like all the money that that goes around down there. And now it's just, it's right now it's to keep up with Georgia and Alabama, right? And not many people are doing that anywhere near consistently. And you're spending all this money to get yourself in that, and LSU's not even doing it yet. And so it's just insane to me that he's getting that much money to just say goodbye to him.
When they hired him, they gave him a trophy to fill in the year when he was going to win a national title. He didn't even win a division title. But it's still good to be Jimbo Fisher.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.